Natural gas will leave the United States in liquid form from the southern Oregon coast if the backers of the Jordan Cove project get all their approvals and permits lined up. Jordan Cove is near North Bend, north and west of the big U.S. 101 bridge there. And the plan calls for more than a ship terminal and liquefied natural gas, or LNG, plant. It also calls for a 232-mile pipeline to carry gas from the Klamath Basin to the plant on the coast. Last month, the final environmental impact statement, or FEIS, you'll probably hear it referred to a bunch today, came out. It appeared to pave the way ahead for the project, but there are still plenty of approvals to get and plenty of opponents, three of whom we talked to on the exchange today. Forrest English is the program director at Rogue Riverkeeper. He's in the room with me. Welcome again, Forrest.
Thanks, Jeff.
Also from Rogue Riverkeeper, we have Sarah Westover, who's the LNG organizer. She is on the phone. Sarah, are you there?
Yeah, thanks for having us back. I also work with Rogue Climate.
Okay, good to have you there in both capacities. And Alex Budd with Southern Oregon Rising Tide is with us as well on the phone. You there?
I am. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, let's see. First crack here. What is a lot of people got under the impression instantly with the release of the FEIS that was it. That was the big approval. Is it in fact the one major approval of many, or what does it represent? Sarah, why don't you take that one?
Sure. So I think that the FEIS coming from FERC, we all knew that that was not going to be favorable to us. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has never turned down an LNG export facility. They're basically a rubber stamping agency. So they still haven't made their final approval on the project, but their FEIS demonstrates exactly why we need to challenge this project at the state level. It is inadequate. It does not address some of the most important issues that Oregon raised as being major concerns about the project. The FEIS does not consider the impacts of climate change or fracking, and it also ignores some of the state of Oregon's major concerns concerning impacts to our waterways, to private property owners, and to our public safety. So when it comes to the FEIS, we know that that is not the end of the line. We still have a very long way to go before this project is a done deal. And that's why we need our state officials, including our agencies, but also our state governor, to take a stand now to stop Jordan Cove and stop the largest climate polluter in the state.
Alex Budd, can you sum up what the thoughts are among Southern Oregon Rising Tide, what the major points of opposition are there?
Yeah, well, I think it's largely similar to a number of the issues that folks who have been against this project for the decades that it's been around for 10 years now. It's largely the same. I mean, I think primarily for those of us involved with Southern Oregon Rising Tide, climate change is the motivating factor. We're seeing with stronger storms, Hurricane Patricia just this week, drier conditions in the summer, more wildfires. Climate change is already here. It's already having a major impact. And we know that that's only going to become worse and more intense as time goes on. And as a young person in my 20s, I think most of us in Southern Oregon Rising Tide, at least, are younger folks. Climate change is an issue that we've basically grown up with. It's been there. It's been something that, scientists have been saying, we need to do something about this. Since basically the time that I was able to, be cognizant of the fact that there were things like that out in the world, that there were scientists and government and everything. So there's a sense of urgency, and we haven't seen our political leaders acting accordingly with that. And we keep building more fossil fuel infrastructure, locking ourselves into more greenhouse gas emissions and climate pollution. And we need to be going the other direction. And I think those of us involved with Southern Oregon Rising Tide, kind of our perspective is, we can't keep kicking the ball down the road here. Sooner or later, we need to turn around and start moving in the other direction on climate change. And the Jordan Cove project would be the largest source of climate greenhouse gases in the state in 2020 once it's built. And so to us, this just is a no-brainer. And it's something that, we cannot let happen here.
When you talk about it as being a large source of greenhouse gases by emissions, by the burning of the gas at the other end, I mean, I'm trying to figure out where...
Yeah. Well, so this is just based on the burning of the gas at the other end. In addition to the liquefaction plant in Coos Bay, they're also building a separate power plant, a natural gas power plant, because that power is just going to be used to liquefy the compressed gas for exports, because that's such an energy-intensive process. So when we say it's going to be the largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the state, that's what we're talking about. And that's not even really taking into account the effect of the gas once it's burned, once it gets where it's going, and also the emissions that are taking place at the point of extraction, because this is fracked gas. And there's a lot of leaking, especially of methane, which is a very powerful greenhouse gas that happens at the site of production in fracking. So this doesn't even include that. If we include those sources as well of emissions, then, you know, it's even worse.
Forrest English, are there any things that were viewed in the early days of the discussion of Jordan Cove? And I guess this is a good point to remind people, this began life as an import terminal when it was thought that we did not have enough domestic natural gas, that we'd have to take it in through the Jordan Cove plant and send it inland to Klamath Falls in the other direction. Now it's become an export terminal because of the abundance of fracked gas. At any point in the process, was it viewed by groups like Rogue Riverkeeper as something you could potentially live with if some tweaks were made, or was it always a blanket, forget it?
Absolutely not. I mean, it certainly has been around since 2005. You know, the original plan was to bring gas from Asia, ship it through Oregon to California. You know, I think it's important to note that both California and Washington have evaluated natural gas terminals like this and have turned them down. So the original proposal was to use Oregon as the pathway to move gas to California. Now the pathway is to move gas from Canada and the interior Rockies through Oregon and move it overseas again. But I think for us, the impacts to the waterways remain pretty constant, regardless of which proposal you go with. You know, the dredging in Coos Bay remains constant. The crossing of 400 waterways, you know, which include the Rogue, is something that's not going to go away no matter which direction the gas is flowing.
You can't be mollified that there are safe ways of doing horizontal drilling under rivers and streams, that sort of thing?
Well, I think there was only 5 horizontal directional drills proposed. And, you know, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife did have a number of serious concerns with that. They do fail sometimes. Those are called frack outs. Specifically on the Rogue, they were worried about Chinook spawning beds in the Rogue, which would primarily decimate one of those populations. So, but the other 395 waterways would just be an open trench through the creek.
So they'd actually go in there with a backhoe, dig the trench, put the pipe in there, and then put the river back in place, in essence.
Yep, no, that's exactly right. I mean, the idea is that you move kind of clean water around it, but, I mean, you're still digging a big trench and dropping a pipe in it and saying everything's going to be okie-dokie when you're done.
We're talking about the Jordan Cove Liquefied Natural Gas Project and the Pacific Connector Gas Pipeline that is proposed to run to it and where things stand with the regulatory approvals. Forrest English is the program director at Rogue Riverkeeper. Sarah Westover is the LNG organizer with that same group and is also with Rogue Climate. Alex Budd is with Southern Oregon Rising Tide, and you can join the discussion at 800-838-3760 by phone, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. A couple of phone calls to go to. Bill in Medford, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
Jeff, I also oppose the Jordan Cove project, but I wanted to clear up a couple of things. I listen to and read all these criticisms of Senators Wyden and Merkley and the governor for not stepping in on this, but it would be totally improper for either a senator or a governor to interfere with the FERC process. The rules of law just don't permit that. So I'm suggesting that some of the opponents are not acting responsibly. I think it should be contested, but that's not the right way to go about it. There was a good editorial in the Mail Tribune here just 2 or 3 days ago that set that out exactly.
All right, let's get a response here. Thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate it. Forrest, you had some thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand the Mail Tribune's point of view here. You know, they said that the governor has limited power to affect the outcome, and that, you know, she doesn't actually have the power to stop the project. And I would say that that's certainly not true. The state agencies, which she is the ultimate boss of, have the power in some cases to enforce federal law as well as state law. And I think what a number of us are asking is for those agencies and for the governor to enforce state law, to enforce federal law that they have delegated to them to protect the values that we care about for our clean water, for our climate, for the landowners that are in the way. So I think that's something that we have a difference of opinion on there.
Sarah Westover, could the governor actually have made any ripples in the FERC process, or is it more a case of wanting to focus on the state process?
Absolutely. Well, the governor has a role to play in both. The governor not only has a lot of political power in the state, obviously, she has a responsibility to help the public interest and the public good of Oregonians. So when we're talking about giving an out-of-state corporation the power to use eminent domain, and when we're talking about a political decision to create what would be the largest greenhouse gas emitter and fossil fuel infrastructure in Oregon, the governor has a role to play in terms of taking us in a different direction. But from a legal perspective, she also has a role to play in the FERC decision. So every governor, it's very uncommon for a governor not to have an opinion about a huge fossil fuel infrastructure project coming into the state. And every governor in Oregon so far that has served out their term during the time of this proposal has had an opinion on it. And we need Kate Brown to break her silence on this issue. So one of the things that she can do is she can challenge FERC for having an inadequate federal review. As we mentioned earlier, the FEIS ignored some of the state of Oregon's major concerns about the project. As Forrest said, this project would violate local, state, and federal law, and there are lots of grounds for the governor to challenge FERC with a petition for rehearing once they give their final approval of the project. And as Forrest mentioned, at the state level, she's obviously a huge political player in the state of Oregon and needs to ensure that our state agencies are doing their job. Now, we're not asking her to interfere with any kind of agency process. That's a scarecrow argument. What we're asking her to do is to make sure state agencies do their job. State agencies have denied LNG proposals in the past at the state level by denying permits that were necessary for it to move forward. So the Bradwood LNG proposal fell apart for a number of reasons, but DEQ did deny water quality permits for that facility. And we want to make sure that our state agencies feel that they have the backing and the political support from our governor to ensure that there's a thorough process and ensure that we're upholding our strictest environmental standards in Oregon. But of course, the governor can still, she can challenge FERC, and she can take that challenge to court if necessary. And I certainly think it's warranted in this situation where we've seen a substantially inadequate federal review.
The Jordan Cove LNG project and the Pacific Connector gas pipeline to it under discussion here on the Jefferson Exchange with Sarah Westover from Rogue River Keeper and Rogue Climate, Forrest English from Rogue River Keeper here in the studio, and Alex Budd from Southern Oregon Rising Tide. You can join our discussion at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Sarah, you and Alex have both mentioned that this would be the number one emitter of greenhouse gases in the state of Oregon. So what's number one now?
Right now, Boardman Coal Plant is the largest greenhouse gas emitter in the state of Oregon, and that's slated to close in 2020. And the issue here is we really need to move forward in Oregon. We are already feeling the devastating impacts of climate change, especially here in southern Oregon, with wildfires and drought. That's impacting our industry, our economy, and we need our leaders at the state and federal level to help us move forward with renewable energy technology, cleaner energies, and not take us backwards with developing fossil fuel infrastructure that will only last so long anyway.
We have another caller on the line. Here's Richard in Humboldt County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Jordan Cove LNG.
Good morning. Looking forward to renewing my membership today. And I wanted to mention that we down here in the Humboldt County area recently, well, a couple years back, wrestled with the same issue, and there's a lot of similarities, I believe, in our situations of being an area that used to be a booming timber industry and used to be a booming industrial port, but are in economic hard times. There's also, I know, some differences between our areas. Environmental concerns were a big issue here. The large argument in favor of it was jobs. As the analysis went forward, it turned out the number of permanent jobs were actually quite few. It's mostly mechanized these days. And as with a lot of shipping, you know, the construction aspect has short-term jobs but limited long-term. But in the end, I think more than the environmental concerns, the reason it was eventually rejected by the community was twofold. One was the danger issue that, you know, even the proponents of the plan admitted that, you know, there were, they drew these circles and showed us on the map the damage if the facility exploded. It's not likely to happen like with nuclear power. It's not likely to, but when it does, as we saw in Japan, it can be quite severe. So most of the residents of Eureka would have died in the initial explosion. That was certainly a deterrent. But in the end, I believe the bigger deterrent was that when the ships come in and out, due to security, it basically requires closing down traffic for other boats. And ultimately, it would have put most of the fishermen out of business. So if you love your fishing industry, you might want to think twice about LNG.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Richard. Appreciate that. Who'd like to give a response from our panel here? Forrest?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. Safety is a major issue. I think the blast zone, were there to be an accident at a tank farm this size in Coos Bay, would be about 2 miles, and it would include most of the town in North Bend. The company that wants to build the infrastructure, Williams Pipeline, is the one that would build Pacific Connector. They've had, I think, 5 accidents in the last couple of years that involved explosions at their facility, evacuating towns, injuring and killing one of their workers. So I think those risks are very real, and we have evidence to point to for that. That's something that I would be terrified of if I lived in Coos Bay.
And what do any of you know about the preparations for seismic resistance and for tsunami protection, given we're talking a low-lying area in the coastal inundation zone, should there be the gigantic earthquake that is potentially looming for the Oregon coast? What do any of you know about the protections for that, for plant and or pipeline?
Well, this is Sarah, and I know that, one of the studies and the analyses that FERC used for their analysis on whether or not the siting of the terminal was actually safe was later found to be faulty. And that's one of the ways in which we engage our U.S. senators is, asking them to encourage FERC to use better and more updated studies when it came to the actual siting of the facility. That can be, so the evidence that's based on, or the analysis that FERC did, is based on outdated information that could potentially put people at risk when it comes to where this terminal would actually be situated on the coast. And we know that Oregon is long overdue for a major earthquake. And I think the question we have to ask ourselves is it worth the risk? There are tens of thousands of people who live in that area, who live in the blast zone, should an earthquake or tsunami happen. And there would be, there would be a power plant, there would be huge methane storage tanks, and this is something, a risk that is too big to ignore and one that we need to take very seriously.
Alex Budd, Richard, when he called in from Humboldt County, mentioned the jobs issue, and I wonder if there's been a great analysis of that, about the number of jobs created during construction and then what it ratchets back down to once everything would be in place.
So the latest numbers that I've seen were actually in FERC's FDIS showed that more than half the jobs created would be out-of-state jobs. No one is pretending that there wouldn't be any jobs. Temporary jobs are real jobs. That's
but they'd work in Oregon. So when you say out-of-state jobs, you mean people coming in from out-of-state?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Contracted positions that would be subcontracted to small companies that would be coming in from out-of-state to work on the project.
All right.
So employment is a real thing. That it's not like there aren't any jobs at all. But I think what Bill is pointing out, that the numbers kind of fluctuate, is certainly true, and it's hard to know for sure until after the fact. And often communities are disappointed with what that ends up looking like. I mean, that's not to say that it's nothing, but it's for the price that's paid, especially when we're talking about the price that's being paid in terms of climate change. It's not worth it. As Sarah was saying, there's lots that can be done with renewable energy. There was a huge thing in Talent this weekend where folks were talking about, how to make renewable energy work for rural Oregon. There are lots of other ways that we can create jobs without also endangering our communities and endangering our rivers and our forests and our climate.
I think when FERC released the document, which of course is called the final environmental impact statement, the final word juked a lot of people into thinking this was final approval. If you look in the FEIS itself, which I did yesterday, there are 13 pages of levels of approval necessary from state, local, and federal agencies, of which I pulled out the last seven pages, which are all the state and local permits and approvals. And it starts with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. If we go in alphabetical order, runs through the Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Forestry, and so forth. I mean, I didn't do a count of individual permits, but Forrest Englert, this is still a long road ahead, it would appear.
It's a very long road. You know, the final environmental impact statement is FERC's final analysis. It's not a decision document. And there's huge numbers of both federal and state agencies left that still have a role to play here. I think the environmental departments of environmental quality, water resources, state lands, and the Department of Land Conservation and Development for the state have major roles to play evaluating permits for water quality to protect wetlands and evaluating whether this project would be consistent and protect sensitive coastal zones. And that doesn't even begin to mention the federal agencies that still are kind of in the middle of their process. We've got the NOAA Fisheries Department, and we have the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife Service, and they're doing an endangered species impacts analysis. The Army Corps of Engineers still has to consider dredging throughout both the rivers and the bay itself. And a lot of these are interlocking systems. You know, this is something that you can't just permit one portion and call it go. So whatever FERC says, I mean, there's still going to be huge numbers of agencies with the authority to stop the project yet to come.
We will continue our discussion beyond this break, so stay tuned as we talk about more about the Jordan Cove LNG proposal and the Pacific Connector gas pipeline proposed to go with it. We are talking to Forrest Englert and Sarah Westover from Rogue Riverkeeper. Sarah is also from Rogue Climate. Alex Budd is of Southern Oregon Rising Tide. A reminder as we go to the break, it's the final day of the fund drive, 888-552-6191 to make your pledge of support. Pledge online at ijpr.org. Back with more on Oregon and LNG in just 1 minute. .836 on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. We're also online at jeffexchange.org. You can find us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Exchange. We're talking about the Oregon Jordan Cove LNG project, liquefied natural gas designed to be compressed and sent overseas from a terminal at Jordan Cove at North Bend, a 232-mile pipeline running to it, the Pacific Connector, all proposed. The final environmental impact statement dropped last month. We're talking to opponents about it. Forrest Englert and Sarah Westover from Rogue Riverkeeper. Sarah's also with Rogue Climate. Alex Budd is with Southern Oregon Rising Tide. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Sarah, when you were talking about wanting Governor Kate Brown of Oregon to step forward and say that the state is against this, I mean, when I look at just the pages and pages and pages of permits that need to come from state agencies, permits, approvals, certificates, and so forth, it seems like there are lots of places where there could be a specific reason, but it sounds like you're talking more of a philosophical opposition on just an all-encompassing look at the benefits or lack thereof of this project.
Well, I think we have to look at this from two angles. We have to look at our elected leaders, like our governor's legal authority, and we also have to look at this from a political angle. The political angle being that we have to do what's right for the people of Oregon, what's right for our citizens. So are we, for example, going to pursue a clean energy future, or are we going to cave to corporate special interests that want to come in from out of state to build this pipeline and export terminal to make billions of dollars at the expense of Oregonians? From a legal perspective, the governor absolutely can take action. So as I mentioned earlier, she can challenge FERC with a petition for rehearing because they didn't do an adequate job. And she can also make sure that state agencies are holding this project to the Oregon's highest environmental standards. And I think that, you know, people across the state are mobilizing and organizing and putting so much pressure on the governor to have her come out and oppose this project. We know that's what's right for Oregon's climate. We know that's what's right for Oregonians, for our rivers, for our waterways, but also for the way that we live in Oregon. We need to protect our home, and we need our governor to stand with us in opposition to this project, which simply makes no sense for Oregonians.
Another call here from Mark in Rogue River. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I was trained there at SOU by Mark Tveskov, who runs SULA, And under his cultural resources management classes, we learned that under Section 106 of the NEPA, if either the SHPO, the State Historical Preservation Officer, or the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer has lands that are impacted negatively, they can step in. And in the tribal situation, that involves federal agencies already. So there's a major resource there at SULA to investigate, in fact, if there aren't many ways that we could put a halt to this thing.
Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Thanks for
that,
Mark. Appreciate that. Anybody want to comment on that?
Yeah, I could take a shot at that.
Forrest?
I think the number of the tribes along the pipeline route actually have had pretty substantial concerns about interfering with their cultural heritage and their ability to do that into the future. That's been an ongoing issue at the site itself with excavations that are ongoing right now for testing. So I think that's a great point. I think the tribes have and the State Historic Preservation Office have a big role to play in terms of if that fits with their vision of their future.
Let's take a call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. First of all, everybody, put your money where your mouth is. If you value this program and you value this opportunity to hear, think, and consider, then put up a few bucks to help it. That's what I've got to say about that.
Thanks for the pitch. Appreciate that, Paul.
Now, as far as this LNG project goes, this is simply another project where out-of-state resources, the lady who was speaking was spot on, where extractive resources are being used and putting the state at considerable risk. Does anybody remember a sawmill? The reason we have a timber shortage in part of big head rig trees that could have been used in sustainable forestation was that every loving one of them was sent to Asia. I watched millions of board feet go out on purpose-built ships from the port of Astoria. The logs were sent out as raw logs as opposed to finished products. The dirty little secret is that it helped support and sustain our balance of trade, which is horrendous to begin with. In this particular instance, this is another ploy to support and to sustain a balance of trade by exporting a dangerous product through lands that it has no business traveling through. In addition to that, it is a global warming agent. It is a greenhouse gas agent. Instead of spending the money on this, we should be spending the money on renewables. That's my view.
All right. Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate that. So we need to wrap up the discussion here. Sarah Westover, what is the next major step? What's the next major thing that we can expect to happen in the way of some announcement about an approval or a denial or something involving Jordan Cove LNG?
Well, certainly as we wait for state agencies to start engaging in permitting processes, in the meantime, we are engaging folks in organizing to make sure that our decision makers know, whether it's agency heads or our governor, Kate Brown, that we expect her to take a stand. And that there has been organizing happening all over the state. There was recently a rally in Salem where folks went to Kate Brown's office and held her accountable. And I think that we can expect a lot more people to engage in that process, and we need them to demonstrate the vast opposition to this issue. And I know that folks at Southern Oregon Rising Tide can speak a little bit more to some of the organizing that's happening and where we're going from there.
Why don't you take it there, Alex, and finish up?
Yeah, so I think, like Paul was saying, people are tired here of our communities being used for the benefit of fossil fuel corporations. And, we're really getting tired of calling on, asking, waiting for our elected officials to stand up and protect us. And people are starting to get a little bit more upset and riled up and take more direct action. So what Sarah was alluding to was last weekend on Monday, an intergenerational group of young climate activists in their 20s and members of the Raging Grannies of Oregon went and had an intergenerational sit-in and tea party in Kate Brown's office, calling on Kate Brown to, stand with all generations against climate change and to reject this project and to come out vocally against it. And that's, we're starting to see a pattern of more of that kind of aggressive and escalated action. On the day that the FEIS was released, there was a similar protest here in Medford at Pacific Connector's local office, where community members went and actually put up art across the front of the building and shut down the office, with sending the message of what this pipeline really would actually mean for our communities, that it would actually mean destroying rivers, destroying our climate, and threatening private property. And I think, you know, that's something that is going to continue to happen and continue to escalate if our elected officials aren't willing to stand with Oregonians and come out against this project. And, you know, that's something that they'll see more of, and that the company and the investors of this project will can only anticipate more of happening the longer this goes on.
All right. Many more steps ahead on Jordan Cove and the Pacific Connector gas pipeline. Alex Budd is with Southern Oregon Rising Tide, Rogue Riverkeeper St. Forest English, and Sarah Westover. And Sarah's also affiliated with Rogue Climate. I want to thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about it. And,
thanks for having us,
We'll be talking again, I'm sure.